Chats from the Blog Cabin.
This is your favorite time of the week with your number one podcast.
Hey guys, we are continuing our series on self-care. This time we're talking about how we need to feel our emotions, how it's okay to feel our emotions, how it's okay to show ourselves some compassion. I am chatting with a wonderful, amazing author. She wrote the book 13, which, you know, when you think of the number 13, you think of really bad things like Friday the 13th and so forth and so on. But Nicole is coming on and sharing about how the bottom of her life, the bottom, everything fell out of her life in 2013 and how she had to rebuild and she has an even better life now. And so I really think it's important that we all look at the obstacles that we're facing and how we can overcome them instead of being stuck where we are. And I think that's a really great way to kind of end out. I have another episode again of talking about safety. That was our very last episode in our self-care series. But I really hope you enjoy this episode with Nicole because I really enjoyed recording it.
This message is being brought to you by Joy Farrell and Laura Frombach, authors of Street Smart Safety for Women, Your Guide to Defensive Living. The threats women face today are unparalleled and more dangerous than ever before. 1 in 3 women globally have been the victim of an attack. Women are terrified, and they're looking for answers. In the book, Street Smart Safety for Women, retired Deputy Sheriff Joy Farrell and technologist Laura Frombach, herself a survivor of family violence, draw on their experiences, both personal and professional, to provide those answers. Available wherever books are sold.
Come join Melissa and her guests on the Chats from the Blog Cabin podcast. From North Carolina, this podcast will have you feeling like you've known these folks for years. Listen in as they chat about life, culture, current events, and more, all with a special Southern flair. Curl up with your favorite beverage and get ready to be entertained. Tune in now for a unique experience that's fun and insightful.
Hey y'all, welcome back to Chats from the Blog Cabin. You know, the show where I virtually invite people into the Blog Cabin to chat about life. And today we are chatting with Nicole. She's the author of 13, One Woman's Sacred Journey to Discovering Her Greatest Power. And she has such a great story, guys. I mean, her life literally blew up. I mean, literally, I would have been curled up in the fetal position, but you managed to get through it and write this incredible, amazing book. So welcome to the show, Nicole, and tell us a little about yourself before we start talking about your book.
Oh my gosh, Melissa, thank you so much for that intro. And I have to say, just from your little like intro video, I'm just sitting there going, oh, that's so nice. I'm just imagining myself. I used to do theater in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a theater there was like a second home to me, and you were bringing back all these wonderful memories from your state. So thank you.
So whereabouts in North Carolina?
So in Raleigh.
Oh, so I'm an hour south of Raleigh. So I'm right there. It's like within a drive. Yeah, there you go.
North Carolina Theater, right in the heart of Raleigh. Yeah. I did 6 shows there, and it was like coming home, you know, working at that theater again mm-hmm. and again. So to answer your question, tell us a little bit about yourself. So my name is Nicole Rogers. I am a confidence coach and spiritual teacher and a former New York City Rec-Et. And with my work, I help influencers, speakers, and artists to create the impact they desire and change the world through a powerful presence. And I do this by teaching that the heart of your confidence is really in discovering who you are. So it is a joy to be here and to talk about 13 because this book really encompasses the core of my teaching and really what brought me into this work in the first place.
Yeah. And you talk about discovering who you are. You had to go through an incredible journey to discover finally who you were. You thought you knew who you were, but you were wrong. Right.
I was completely wrong. And, you know, it really was. And I'm sure that your listeners can relate that I thought that who I was were these personas I had created, you know, especially as an artist. It's like a giant trap, I think, that is a part of that industry, that you kind of come in and think, well, you are who you play. You are this character. You are these things. And I really fell for that. And so when my life went up in smoke, and the biggest question that came up was, who am I? It really was a lot to reckon with, because I had based it much more on who I thought I was supposed to be, mm-hmm. as opposed to who I actually was at my core.
So let's talk about that journey of you finding out who you actually were at your core, and as opposed to who you thought you were supposed to be. So let's start at the beginning.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, I went through this massive devastation of, it began with a divorce and then was being robbed, losing a dear friend to a heart attack, and being in two car accidents. So there was a lot of chaos within a concentrated amount of time that was leaving me kind of like, what is going on? And when the chaos began, I had a voice that came up in my head that said, you need meditation. And I remember thinking at the time, this would probably be a good idea, because I had been in my first career as a performer by that point for 19 years. And the thing that I struggled with the most was an inner critic. Mm-hmm. I struggled with a voice that came up that would cause me to doubt myself, my abilities. And it was always confusing and frustrating, because I was really good at what I did. And I would have these moments of brilliance, and I did great when I was hired, and all these wonderful jobs. But it's like, but what's happening there? You know? And so when this voice came up, and my life fell apart, I trusted this voice. I call it the voice of 13. And I followed this thread, and this thread ended up leading me to Zen, which was a complete surprise to me. I had been raised Methodist, but the truth was that I had lost faith. I really had lost any kind of relationship with the divine, you know, with something larger than myself. And so here I am stepping into a faith practice again for really the first time in a long time, and a practice that was finally giving me what I needed, which was tools around my mind. Mm-hmm. As it was just cuckoo, right? I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what was going on. And there were two main teachings that I was given in the beginning that really helped me with discovering who I was, which was, first, I am whole and complete as I am. Mm-hmm. So within Buddhism, they say you have a Buddha within. You know, with any other religion, you can look at it as you have a divinity within, a wholeness within. You know, there is a part of you that is unscathed, a God within, you might, depending on your beliefs. And this was really radical for me, because I really thought I was broken at my core, you know, that I needed to be fixed at my core. So to gain this teaching that I was actually whole was pretty radical for me. And it's like, well, wow, if I'm whole, then what does that mean for all these other personas and things that I've built about myself? And then the second thing that they taught was that change is constant. And the reason that this was so helpful was because here I am in the midst of like everything falling apart, mm-hmm. and thinking, okay, if change is constant, then where I am right now will change and I can change. So these personas and these identities that I had held on to so tightly, like being a wife, being an artist, all these things, I was like, no, I am these things and I'm nothing else. It's like, wait a minute. These could change too. So it just started to like loosen up a lot of tight grip that I had, and allowed me instead to be like, well, if I'm not just these things, maybe these are part of me, but they're not all of me. And so that was really helpful in just like stretching it out, so that I could then discover, wait, what all is inside there? It's not just these things.
Now, you mentioned the car accident, so let's talk about that a minute, because I was shocked when I read that. It was two in the same day.
Yeah, and this happened after I'd gone through the divorce, after I'd been robbed, and after I'd lost a dear friend to a heart attack. So this was beginning of November in 2013, because the book is called 13 for several reasons, but one of them that all these things happened in 2013. And it really was just, I'm going to die today. Who gets in two car accidents in one day? The first car accident was really not much, you know, like it was a rear end thing. Thankfully, everybody was okay. I was okay. It was more shock to the system. You know, there wasn't a lot of damage. So I pretty much drove out of that one unscathed. But then 10 minutes later, and I'm 5 minutes from home, then I went through a intersection and I couldn't fully see because there was a van that was blocking my view. And a car came and hit me on the passenger side, caused my car to spin and go to the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. So I went into shock at that point. I didn't go into shock with the first one because it was more like a startle, but not, but this one I went into shock and I literally thought, I'm going to die today. And I, you know, it was crazy because then a tow truck came and ended up taking my car and ended up, and it ended up in a lot where like they wanted to pull my car apart and sell it for parts. I mean, it was just like things were so cuckoo at that point. And I will say that I did survive and I was okay. And at that point I had already started to discover these tools. So I now had things to be like, okay, like, here's where I'm going to apply them. And the other thing that was really helpful was, and this to me is so synchronistic, a week later, I had to drive. Mm. So my car is totaled. I had to rent a car and drive. So it was like a week later, I had to get back up on the horse after being thrown. And I was able to do it. And so I think that the combination of having the tools and somehow living through terrible things prior, realizing that I was still alive and two, that I could get back in the car again, helped me. And it was also just the storm wasn't done. You know, it wasn't until January that I went, okay, I feel like it's over. It's like, you know, when you walk out after a bad storm and you're seeing the clouds part and you're seeing the blue, I was like, okay, it's done.
Yep, I can so like empathize with you on that because 2014 was my worst year. I mean, we had a car accident. My daughter was diagnosed with epilepsy. We didn't know what was going on with her. And then my dad, who was my biggest hero, ended up going into hospice care and died of simple lymphatic leukemia in 2014. So that all just happened all like piles on in 1 year. So I sympathize with you. It's like, okay, universe, God, what else are you going to throw at me this year?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's my hope with this book is that one, it gives a term to what we all experience. Like, I imagine your listeners right now are going, oh my God, that was my 2016 or that was my 2002. Or, you know, they're saying I had a year just like that. And to have some kind of meaning and understanding around it can help us so much with navigating it because it'll happen again. But we can at least then be in the middle of it or enter into it or exit from it from a place of, wait, this is actually a divine storm. And whatever I'm experiencing this year is moving me closer to what I desire. And it can be so difficult in the moment. And that's why, you know, I'm so passionate about teaching this, to be offering these tools of compassion and care. And like, what do you do with the strong emotions? And what do you do when your life is turned upside down? And how do you come out of it stronger than when you entered?
Because you don't think when you're in the middle of it that you're ever going to come out of it or in the thick of it. It's like, no, I'm never. This is the end of my life as I know it. But it ended in your life as you knew it, but you had such a better life waiting for you.
Yeah. And there's something, and you can, I'm sure, relate to this, but there's something really powerful about going through something devastating and emerging on the other end, breathing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be that simple. I'm still breathing.
Yep, for sure.
Wow, that didn't kill me. And it doesn't diminish the pain and it doesn't diminish the challenge, but it ends up pointing us back to our resilience and to what was here for me to learn. You know, if it wasn't for losing everything in my life, I wouldn't be here in a happy marriage and a first-time mother and living in a home I love and being a published author. Like, none of those things would have happened. Like, my life had to rip apart because I was trying to make these things happen through that life and the way that I built it. And it wasn't going to happen.
That is so true. And we need to take a brief commercial break, but we'll be right back. And when we come back, you're going to read a part of your book, correct?
Yes.
All right. Here we go.
People welcomed me and they knew the pain of the journey that we'd been on because they'd been there too.
Other Parents Like Me is an online community, peer-led, for parents with kids struggling with mental health and or substances.
It's a space that's safe. It feels like I can actually share what's going on.
We offer 15 daily support groups per week and live speaker talks on Thursdays, as well as a monthly expert panel.
We also have a resource hub that has a toolkit. This includes over 1,000 articles, podcasts. There's a glossary with the most recent and relevant terms. And we have a directory that's been vetted.
The overwhelming feeling when we're sitting in a meeting and I'm telling my story and I see others shaking their head, tears falling. You know, they understand this roller coaster and they're along for the ride.
And we are back with Nicole. She's going to read part of her book, 13, One Woman's Sacred Journey to Discovering Her Greatest Power. So, Nicole, it is all yours.
Okay, so I'm going to read the chapter Tarantula. The theater holds a holiday party for us and has an animal interaction company set up down in our main rehearsal hall. We have many kids in the cast, so they are all thrilled. I put on my red top, holiday earrings, and go. The last conversation with my husband still ringing in my ears, I enter the room. I immediately hear the gleeful cries of our youngest cast members and see giant tortoises slowly crawling on the floor. I feel a smile coming and make my way around to the back of the room where my friend Tina has a giant yellow boa constrictor wrapped around her. She's laughing, and the other dancers are all gathered around to see her handling this massive snake when out of nowhere, one of the animal handlers pops a tarantula on Tina's head. I completely freeze. Every hair on my body has gone into high alert as I look over behind Tina and see a table with four tarantulas sitting as if they were flower arrangements. I see myself standing in the basement of my youth, terrified of the massive black spiders who took up residence in every dark window, torturing me. And then the trainer looks at me and asks, "You want to hold the spider?" My decades of arachnophobia are screaming, "No!" And then a completely new thought comes into my head. I had always thought my biggest fear was spiders, but here I was living my biggest fear, losing my marriage and ability to have the family I deeply desired. I was living it and somehow was still breathing each day, so maybe I could hold a spider? I hold out my hand, and the trainer places the tarantula in my palm. It starts to scurry, and I suddenly realize I need to calm down so it won't freak out so much. I start to breathe deeper, and the tarantula stops moving and just stands frozen in the center of my hand. I look down and see its abdomen is shaking, and I realize, oh my gosh, it's just as scared as I am. I feel a calming within, and the spider seems to relax. I notice how soft the tarantula's fur is and how lightweight. It was nothing like I thought. My fear was nothing like I thought. Just as I'm smiling at conquering a fear I've had for 30 years, a friend takes a picture. Then the trainer says to me, "Want to hold a scorpion?" Without a beat, I reply, "Sure." This becomes my new profile picture, and I go home, reaching for my journal to write. Today, I held a tarantula in my hands, my greatest fear, and it was docile, just as scared as I and soft. Today, I held a python around my arms, a scorpion in the palm of my hand, and a bearded dragon on my chest. Today, I told my mother about my husband's affair, and she finally understood my anger. Today was a beautiful day.
I absolutely love that. I'm glad you read that part because I would be freaking out, first of all, with the boa constrictor because I do not like snakes at all. So I would be freaking out about that. But I'm so glad you shared that part because it's when you conquered your fears and you're like, wait a second, I faced so much more in my life. Why can't I face this?
Yeah. And then to find out through facing it that it was literally nothing like I thought and actually was so much like me.
Yeah. So let's talk about the importance. You mentioned several times right now about the 13, why you entitled it 13, because it happened in 2013, but there's also significance to the numbers. And let's talk about the significance of numbers as well.
Yeah. So did you know that 13 is actually a highly divine and feminine number? It's super sacred. And there's so many cultures that hold it in high esteem, but what happened, right?
Yeah, right. Friday the 13th is the only thing I think about when I think of 13.
What happened? You know, it was hijacked. It was turned into horror films and like all kinds of superstitions and bad luck. And so, you know, when I started to really look into the numbers, I just thought, wow, this number, what's happened to this number is exactly what's happened to our wholeness. Right? We've been hijacked. We've been led to believe that we're unlucky or evil or capable of terrible things when the truth is we are magical and we are divine and we are all of these things. So I wanted the book to be about the reclaiming, not just of the number, but that could be an inspiration for anyone reading it.
Yeah. You mentioned angel numbers as well. The 13 is being angels are with you. Let's talk about angel numbers a minute because my daughter really has gotten me onto that. It's like when you see a number that appears several times, like when we go on road trips, she's like, oh, there's 333. Let me look it up and see what it means. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, numerology is so fascinating. And I remember I took a course with this amazing dream shaman named Robert Moss. And he talked about this fun thing he teaches called sidewalk tarot, which is basically you put a question out to the universe. I'm seeking answers on this. I want clarity on this, you know, help me. And then you just go out into the world and you see what's there. Mm-hmm. And so it could be a number on a truck, you know, it could be a number here or there, but I really believe, especially after this year, that numbers play such a significant part in our life. And it's no accident to me that it was 2013, that it was over 13 months, and that then I was led and inspired to call the book this. So I feel like I've always said that I'm in service to the teaching of 13, and I feel like I'm in service to this number and to what it was meant to do, not what it's been turned into.
So what made you decide to write this book and say, okay, my light blew up. Now I'm just going to share it with everybody else.
Could you repeat that question? We went out for a second.
I said, what made you decide to write the book? You know, your life blew up. Most people would have said, I'm not going to share my intimate details, but you didn't share a lot of intimate details, but you shared enough of the story to know that there was a lot of stuff going on and you were very forthcoming with your truth. And I think a lot of people, when they write a book and they tell their story, sometimes they hide their truth a little bit, but you were very forthcoming. You didn't have to tell all the details, but you gave enough details that people could kind of know what was going on. So what made you decide, okay, I'm going to sit down and write this book?
Yeah. So I'll back up, and this is in the book. There was a huge turning point for me when I went to my first ever support group. It was called the Healing Circle. And it was really for anybody that was healing from anything. You know, for me, it was heartbreak. Other people, they were in remission. Some people had chronic anxiety. You know, they were healing in a broad term. But I'd never been to a support group before. And the experience I had there of being vulnerable publicly, which I had never been before, right? It was always about like every hair in place. I'm being paid to play a part on stage. And also that I was hiding for 4 years the fact that I was having an affair. And I wasn't telling anybody because I was so afraid that I would be rejected, that I would be judged, you know, I would be left, all of the things. And so when I went to this support group and I decided to be honest, what happened was people came closer. And I noticed that my vulnerability opened up for each person in kind to do the same. And it was like the spider moment. It was a complete pattern interrupt of, I've been wrong. I really thought that I had to have it all together, that I had to hide things. But the truth is that when I'm vulnerable, it opens the space for others. And so that shift that happened in 2013 really lay the groundwork for the work I do now. So I knew that when I was going to write this book, that I would be completely honest, that it was really important for them to understand what was going on. They needed to have the full story. And when I decided to create my own company and start coaching, and I started being interviewed, I would share this story, you know, before the book. I'm just telling everybody, this is how I became a coach. And every time I share the story, people's eyes would just get so big. And so I knew I would watch the story have a very positive effect on people. Mm-hmm. And I would watch them soften. I watched them feel inspired. And I just thought, I have to share this. Look what it does for people. And also, it was just so alive. You know how, I don't know if you're an Elizabeth Gilbert fan at all, but she is one of my favorite authors. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Okay. Now I know who it is. Yes.
Yeah. And she also wrote this book called Big Magic. And so in Big Magic, she says that we don't choose, like as artists, we don't choose our stories. We don't choose our art. Like it chooses us. And she talks about it as kind of this like energy that's just kind of going through the air. And when it finds us, it's our job to translate it. So I felt like this has landed with me. And again, saying, you know, I'm in service to 13, like I have to tell this story.
Yeah. And part of the story that you talk about in your book is showing your self-compassion, because we are our worst inner critics. We are like, we can like take something so minor and blow it up to be so huge and just really get down on ourselves. How do we show self-compassion?
I love this question, Melissa. So the first step is one to recognize, wow, I'm self-attacking. I'm being hard on myself. So that's the first step. And then the second step is to create some kind of relaxation. So that's going to be different for everybody. And this is something that I really specialize in my work with my clients. But, you know, whether it is prayer or meditation or some kind of energy medicine, but it's something that allows the nervous system to receive a signal of safety. So there's like, oh my God, it's there. And then it's like, okay, let's now meet this with some space and relaxation. And then in the relaxation, and not before, then there can be some love and self-care. So, you know, it can be as simple as, even though I feel angry, I deeply love and accept myself. Or it could be as simple as like just hand on the heart and rubbing it and saying this too, meaning whatever the strong emotion is, that it's just like, you are allowed. But those steps before are so important, because otherwise we're like pushing something and we may not be ready for mm-hmm. self-compassion because we're still in the midst of it. So it's recognizing, creating space, and then some kind of self-love, you know, some kind of self-affirmation. And it could be as simple as just like rubbing the arms and just like, okay, we're all right. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're okay.
There's that power of touch, even if it's your own touch, it just does something to humans.
Yeah. And actually massage therapists talk about this a lot with like, there's something very powerful about being touched by someone else. But if we're in a state of really high reactivity, then us touching ourselves, we're going to know the best pressure, mm-hmm. right? It's not going to create even more guardedness, but it's like, no, we know if we can touch this much, or if like, oh yeah, let's let's really get in there and dig in. So it's building that self-trust, which is so important in that moment of self-compassion, to be like, I see you, and oh yeah, oh wow, I'm really, you know, like when we're feeling a lot of grief, we'll have tension around our lungs, mm-hmm. you know, and around the heart. So it's like, you might go in there and start massaging and start crying, but it's like, it's okay. Like I know, and you know, like how much you can massage it, or if it's like, yeah, I'm just going to lightly touch, and that feels safe. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm okay.
And it was almost like sometimes when you just look at people and you're like, can you just give me a hug, please? I don't want anything else. I just want a hug, right?
It's so true. So I don't know if you follow the 5 love languages at all.
I do.
Okay. So my first love language is quality time, and my second is physical touch. So you're speaking my language right now.
Right there. Right there with you. And I would much rather have quality time over anything else in the world. I mean, anything.
Yeah. So the thing that helps me the most is hugging my husband, mm-hmm. because it takes care of my 2 top love languages, because a hug isn't quick. You know, a hug is like,
yeah,
ah, let me just come in here. And then I've got touch. And it's like, I always say to him, I'm saying, you know, this is the answer to everything, honey. Just a hug.
Yep. For sure. Now we talked about self-compassion and, you know, the power of touch, but also about respecting your anger. And I'm going to read a part of your book. I was looking back for my highlights. It says, anger is the feeling, the behavior is the action. And that like, boom, stuck on me, because most people think anger is the action. It's not the feeling. You know, they think, oh, I'm so mad, I'm so angry. And they start throwing things or start, you know, just blow up. But you saying that, it was like, oh my gosh, it's like a whole mind shift about what's going on. So how can we respect our anger?
These are such good questions. Well, you can begin by recognizing that anger is a feeling, mm-hmm. and that our feelings are actually doorways to the landscapes of our needs. So our feelings are pointing us towards what is going to give us life energy. Mm-hmm. So if we look at any feeling, let's use anger, any feeling that maybe society has said, especially for women, no, that's not right. You're not supposed to feel that, mm-hmm. you know, it's not proper or whatever. Then we go, wait a minute, I'm feeling angry for what? I'm feeling angry, and this is coming up to point me towards my life energy. This is pointing me towards what matters for me. So that is like a whole different framing. And then you can recognize, I'm feeling this, and allow yourself to feel it. Mm-hmm. And then make a decision upon what is the action. And it might be that the action is processing the anger. Yeah. So that could be a really good shakeout. That could be stomping your feet. It could be, you know, punching a pillow. But that what you're doing is the energy that's come up in your body is there for a reason. And you honor and respect that. So move it. And once you've moved it, then say, what is this pointing me towards? What is so important to me that I feel this?
Mm-hmm. That is so true.
You know, for my divorce, I was so angry because I wanted to have a family. It was like the deepest desire of my heart. You know, we were trying to get pregnant. It wasn't happening. And I wanted that so badly. So I was so angry. I was red hot angry. And I was so angry with myself because here I was 37 and I thought, oh my God, I've wasted years with a man that didn't want to be a dad in all this time. I didn't trust myself enough to know that he wasn't the father of my child.
Yeah. Oof. That's a lot right there. Woof. Let's talk about now. You've gone through process anger. Now let's talk about forgiveness, because a lot of times with anger comes resentment. And so we need to learn the forgiveness as well. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. The forgiveness is, I feel honestly, probably a lifelong practice. I think that this is something that we have to revisit again and again. But I know what made a difference for me, and this is why I put it in the book, was just this idea of what am I holding on to? So if I stay angry, then I'm keeping this like cord attached with my ex, with the situation. Like, you have to apologize. And it's like, how long do I want to hold on to that? And if this is the only way I'm going to move forward, and this is the only way I'm going to forgive him, is through this one conditioned way, it just got to the point where I was like, this isn't going to work. And it was so clear to me that if I was going to move forward and heal and find a partner who wanted to have a family as much as I did, I had to let go. So it wasn't as simple as, well, I just drop it. It didn't work like that. It took time. It took years, actually. But at least then I was making the decision, I'm going to get on that path. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to respect my feelings, my anger, my sadness, my grief, all of those things that are going to come up on this path to forgiveness. I'm going to respect them and process them until I'm in that place where I don't feel that pull. And so it's like making that decision just helped me. And it's like little by little, you know, one of my first spiritual teachers talked about working with your mind is kind of like there's a wall in front of you and it's all these stones. But he didn't say you knock the whole thing down in one go. You take it down stone by stone. And I feel like this is such a healthier way to approach any devastation and any healing, especially from heartbreak, is to imagine, okay, stone by stone. And there might be some stones that are a little stuck and they got a little concrete in there, and that's okay. And there's other stones that are going to come easily. And sometimes you move one and five go with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it really is a process. Forgiveness is a process. It's not like you wake up and it's done.
Done, for sure. I read somewhere, an author did the forgiveness of being unforgiving. They likened it to an octopus with the tentacles. And they said the tentacles, the more that you don't forgive, the tentacles go around your heart and they squeeze and it makes it no room for anything else because all you have is resentment. And then once you just like start like having that forgiveness and just they slowly come off one by one. And I'm a very visual person and I don't have it in here, but it's in my home. I have a little toy octopus, a little baby toy that I sit in my prayer desk, you know, my meditation. When I do that, I have it sitting right there to remind myself that I need to forgive, you know, because sometimes you need that visual to say, oh, what was that for? Oh yes, forgiveness. I need to let go of things.
Yeah. And I feel like this is so important too. I didn't say this before, is that the octopus has to hold on to something.
Mm-hmm.
But what if the octopus is holding on to something else and not your heart? So it's the concept of, as you're going through the forgiveness, that you are replacing what the hold was on something else. So, you know, in my example, it was holding on to my ex. And so as I had to like undo each thing, it's like, okay, well, what am I going to take that energy, all of that energy towards him and place it in what? And so that was a process too of being like, I'm going to place this for me. It was in my spiritual practice. It was in rebuilding my life. It was in discovering who I was. Like, and so then there isn't as much energy here, but the energy is still being used
in a positive way,
in a way that's affirming your life.
Yep.
But it's not cutting off anything or making me wrong for having the energy in the first place.
I love that, because a lot of people think that if they're mad, they get angry. If they feel sad, if they feel any type of grief, if they feel happy, sometimes it's like they're not supposed to feel these certain emotions. And we have a right to feel the way we feel.
Yeah. And our feelings, like I said, are pointing us towards our life energy. So they're actually really helpful messengers. And when we have these tools to be able to come into the body and to be able to relax, then we can explore what's inside this feeling. I mean, they're really superpowers, actually.
I love that. Superpowers of feelings. I love that. So let's talk about, we talked about numbers, but let's talk about the role they play in your life besides the 13. What other numbers have come up for you? Or do you think you'll ever write another book with a different number?
Oh my gosh. You know, it's funny. I've thought about this because I became a first-time mother last year at the age of 47.
Ooh, congratulations. Woo!
Thank you. And it was an 11-year journey for me, you know, that went through the divorce and IVF and miscarriage and then a failed adoption and then a successful adoption. And so it was, you know, there's the 11, you know, there in the journey and then the 47. And much like wanting to bring 13 back to its original state, there's also just for like as a woman who's my age to reclaim my age, mm-hmm. as opposed to what has been put on, well, I'm 48 now, but 48 looks like this. And I'm like, yeah, I just became a parent. My 48 sure looks a lot different. And yet it is like my 48, like it's the 48 of my heart. It feels so good. So I've thought about that with 47 and just, I love this idea of bringing numbers back to like their original intention. And I talk about this in the book with the number 7 and with the number 2, just around the magic of them and all of these cultures that hold these numbers in such high regard, so that when people see them, when they come up, like the angel numbers that your daughter was talking about, there's like, oh, I'm paying attention. I'm getting a signal from the divine. I'm getting a signal from the God or whatever you believe in. And Okay. I'm ready.
I love that. You said you had an 11-year journey, correct? From the divorce to becoming a woman. But 4 plus 7 is 11. Did you notice that? When you said it happened at 47?
Oh, no. See?
I spotted that. And I was like, wait a second. 4 plus 7 is 11.
This is the coolest thing about numbers. Like, it's not accidental. You know, so when I'll be honest, like I don't know much about astrology. Like I have so much to learn around that. But when you start like diving into like blueprints and things like that, you just go, whoa, like I really am a part of something larger.
Larger.
And that's so exciting.
It is. It's super exciting. Talking about the part of something larger, you mentioned the powerful presence a lot in your book. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So this is the name of my signature course. And this is something that I'm so passionate about because of my history of being a performer. So what happened for me after I went through this terrible year, I went through my 2013, and you can imagine that I didn't work in my industry that year. My ex is an actor, and everybody knew. So I was coming into the audition room and literally had like directors and choreographers coming out from around the table to hug me and say, I'm so sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, I wasn't booking any of those jobs. And on top of the fact that I was just, I was really a mess. You know, I can remember going in for one audition and it was a casting director who I knew very well, very close friends with, who knew my ex. And, I went in and sang an upbeat because I was like, I can sing an upbeat. And then the director was like, do you have a ballad? And I had taken all the ballads out because I knew there's no way I could sing a ballad. Unfortunately, I hadn't taken everything out.
Mm.
And he got up and he went over to the piano and he was like, "Oh, My Funny Valentine, would you like to sing that?" And I was a deer in headlights. And I went, sure. I think I blacked out in the middle of the song. Like somehow I sang it, but it was just strained and crazy. And it was over and he just kind of said, "Thank you." I was like, okay. And I walked out and the casting director came out after me and she's like, "I'm so sorry. How are you?" And I'm like, "Oh my God." So anyway, all this to say, 2013, I didn't work in my industry. But when I came into 2014, I really had this feeling of hope. And I really felt like, as I said, the storm had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working with a life coach for the first time ever and started to dream. You know, it's like, what does it mean? Like I had gone straight from college into marriage. So I didn't know what it meant to be a woman making her own life. I had no idea, which is why I hired a coach. And I had this total resurgence in my performance career. And directors and choreographers that had never paid attention to me before were suddenly looking at me and going, "Nicole?" And this is after 19 years in the industry.
Wow.
And it wasn't just the attention from them. It was that I felt different. Like I felt like I could take risks and do all these things. And so there was just this, oh, wow. I'm no longer acting.
Mm.
Oh, I can be on stage and be myself. Yeah. So this was so radical for me. And I mean, out of this and working with the coach, I decided that I wanted to teach this, but I was so passionate about it because it was releasing me from placing all of my self-worth on the audience.
Mm.
And I just thought, wow, for anybody that has an audience, customers, clients, you know, it's so easy for us to say, well, it's only going to be okay. I'm only going to be okay if they say I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
If my video is good enough, if my social media is getting enough likes, you know, if my talk gets people clapping for artists, if I'm sold out, it's a one-way ticket to doom. Because we're not relying on our own confidence and our own power, our own self-worth. We're relying on how we're perceived, which we have no control over.
That is so true. We have no control over.
So I created Powerful Presence to help people that are in front of audiences to stand in their worth and to be able to be in front of their audience and expand and create what they want in their work from a grounded place. And that means then that they're going to do their best work, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not based on whether or not they're liked. It's much more authentic to them. And in my experience, and I've seen this in the arts, I've seen it in business owners, I've seen it in influencers, when the person who's speaking is grounded, so is the audience. Like I call it an audience loop. So it's like, if you're okay, I'm okay with who I am. I am confident in who I am. Then your audience is like, I want more of that. So you're getting what you actually want, but you're getting it through a way that is actually healthy and sustainable, as opposed to always relying on what other people think of you will burn you out.
That is so true. So true. So how can people work with you then? How do they go about working with you?
Yeah. So at my website, I've got a tab that's work with me. I go to NicoleRogers.com and click on the work with me. And I have VIP days. I have private coaching. I have my signature Powerful Presence course, which you've got two options. If you're someone that is like, "Nicole, I'm good," you can go through it on your own. Do it at your own pace. But if you're like, "Nicole, I really would love a guide through this work," then you can go through it with me. And then there is my book, of course, you know, if that's such a beautiful entry, which is like, why don't I read the book and just kind of see, is this speaking to me? So, you know, please reach out. You can contact me via my website. You can also DM me. I'm a big fan on Instagram. If you're on Instagram, please come and say hi. Say, hey, I heard you on Melissa's podcast. You know, any questions that you've got, that's also a really great way to reach out.
And our time is almost up. Before we get around to it, you already said where people can find you already, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Do you have one last little nugget? I always ask people, like, maybe it's something that you've shared that you want to reshare to make sure you got your point across, or maybe something that you don't think we covered in the interview, but you would like to share now.
I feel like what I want to say is that you can create your dream life from devastation. And it sounds really counterintuitive, but if you can view your challenges through the lens of a 13, through the lens of a divine storm, then it will open you to a power and a strength that you didn't know you had. And I will also say this, that this is not a journey to take alone. It's not a test. It's really an opportunity to open. And so I know what's happened for me again and again, because I went through this year, and then I went through, you know, infertility. And I also went through a chronic pain journey. Like I've been through a few 13s, but in every one of them, it really has been a moment of palms up, help. And I have to say that every time it's come, you know, in so many ways, through people, through signs, through support. And it's really helped me, because that was probably one of the biggest lessons I learned. This all started because I finally got out of my own way and asked for help. And it came. It came.
I love how you said you get out of your own way and ask for help, because I think a lot of times society deems that you're not supposed to ask for help. You're supposed to do everything on your own. And I like the way that you're giving. Not only did you give yourself permission, but you're giving the listeners and the viewers the permission to ask for help.
Yeah. And to ask from help, and this is a really important caveat, to ask for help from people, systems, groups that you feel safe. And after you've been there, maybe not during, because sometimes processing things can bring up a lot of stuff, but after you leave, you feel better. Yeah. If after you have worked with these people, spoken with them, gone through their processes, you feel better, that's your team. And that is going to, that is, those are the people that are going to help you transform your life.
Yep. For sure. 100%. Now, like I said, our time is up, but where can people find you? First of all, where can they find the book?
Okay. So they can find the book everywhere, which is so nice to say. The easiest thing, you've got the Amazon link right there. Thank you so much. It's on Amazon, Goodreads, barnesandnobles.com. Also, if you want to just go to 13thebook.com, it's simple, easy to remember. There's a really fun trailer there. Go check it out. And all the buttons and the links are there as well.
And your website?
Yes, NicoleRogers.com.
Okay, can you spell it out for people? Because Nicole was spelled differently.
Absolutely. I know, I got the weirdest spelling ever. It's NicoleRogers.com.
And you also said DM you on Instagram, which we're going to put the Instagram up. And if you'll tell people where on Instagram what that is.
Wonderful. So that's at Nicole, N-I-K-O-L, underscore Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S.
Nicole, thank you so much for coming on, for sharing your story, for being brave enough to write 13, and for putting it out there in the world so that people can read your story. And just blowing my mind, it blew my mind when I was listening. I mean, like, I have notations upon notations upon notations where I just highlighted like whole patches. That's the reasons why I like the Kindle, so that I can go back and refer to it later on. Then I don't have to go flip through everything. So thank you for writing the book and for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for asking such powerful and wonderful questions. I really appreciate you.
Not a problem. So until next time, guys, I will put in the show notes where you can find Nicole, as well as you can find the book. And until next time, be blessed. And most importantly, keep chatting and show yourself some self-compassion. Bye.
Chats from the Blog Cabin. We not only have voices for a podcast, but also faces for YouTube. Don't miss your next episode.